never liked it on the ground. I'm not coming down. I wanna go higher, higher, higher than that.
This is Write Your Own Story, Three Keys to Rise and Thrive in Life and Business. I'm your host, Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. Hi, I'm Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. I am the CEO of a company called WeThrive.live, my keynote speaker and an executive coach. And you are tuning in to our Future of Work series here on the podcast. I am passionate about the shift that we are in as a society. And I believe it's the greatest shift that we've been in since the shift from the agricultural age to the industrial age model of work, where the work construct has such a significant impact on society. And in 2020, we experienced a global shutdown, global trauma, which led us into years worth of reflection on what success really is and what we want our lives to be. And I believe that we're still in this bit of chaotic shift, trying to decide what the right answer is. And what I'm seeing is a much needed and necessary shift to where our sense of worth and our sense of value doesn't come from our achievements and our work title, but comes from us knowing us. And I believe that is the shift that we have needed for some time, because the way that we were working was leading us straight to an epidemic of burnout. And while this time of chaotic shift is full of uncertainty and many leaders trying to figure out what is the answer, I wholeheartedly believe that the future belongs to those leaders who are willing to be creatives, who are willing to create the future of work. And I want to be a part of that effort. And so this series is dedicated to interviewing people and asking them, what do you think the future of work could and should be? What problems should we solve? What ideas should we consider? And by doing this series, it will lead us into our own sense of reflection as leaders and as employees. And what do we want? How do we want work to feel? And as we make this shift, I believe as we change the work, we can change the world into a society that honors each of our uniqueness and honors the value that we bring into an organization. So if we can change the work, we can change the world. Because, you know, making money just ought to feel better. So I'm glad you're here. Hey, how's it going? I'm excited for you to hear from Maggie Miller today. Maggie is a senior director at Delta Faucet Company, and she has been in my Rise and Thrive experience and was one of our speakers at our Stand Tall in Your Story event, actually last year. And Maggie was the first to ever deliver a talk for our event, 8 3/4 of a month pregnant. She actually delivered the baby shortly after, and we talk about it in this episode. And what you're going to take away from this episode is really a framework or a checklist almost of how to effectively manage flexible and remote work schedules. What's been great about working with Maggie is her ability to see her people as the individuals that they are and create scenarios that connect them to the work in meaningful ways. And the fact that Delta Faucet Company has made a commitment to flexible and remote schedules being a part of the company forever. I know this is a topic that is near and dear to many of your hearts. So here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have a conversation with one of my favorite career moms, Maggie Miller from Delta Faucet, who is one of my Rise and Thrive alums. And the reason she tops in my career moms category, because I love a lot of career moms, is because she delivered one of the most amazing talks to a group of 200 plus people and delivered a baby. What, 48 hours later?
Yeah, it seemed like all in the same breath.
Which is funny, because at that stage of pregnancy, the breath is
very
scarce.
Hard to breathe. Yeah. No, right after we left the stage that day, the next like 24 hours, I was admitted to the hospital. And I think he was born like 36 or 40 hours after the talk.
the fact that we are measuring it in hours.
Yeah, it was hours.
Days or weeks or months. And I mean, we're talking, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Stand Tall in Your Story event, we're talking about stage, lights, hair, makeup, delivering a speech, a talk. And I remember saying to you, wow, if you go into labor right now, you're going to look really good with your hair and makeup.
Not like that.
And that actually happened to a friend of mine. Her baby came super fast, unexpectedly, and she was out on a date night with her husband and dolled up as one of their, like, we should go out before the baby comes. And then the baby came that night, and she's holding the baby in, like, full-on hair and makeup. And it was...
You just never know.
You never know.
You never know. No, by the time I had rehearsed and rehearsed and planned and gotten all dolled up and ready and there that day, I was like, I better get to deliver this speech. I'm going to be very mad if I do not.
We did record a just in case pre-speech.
Yeah.
But you made it. I had no doubt. I knew it was going to happen. Well, we're talking today, in a way, it's related to career moms because we're talking about the future of work and some best practices around a flexible remote work environment. And I think this is a really important conversation. And you're a great leader who works really hard to make this work. And you have a company, Delta Faucet, that cares a lot about it. You have a lot of moms on your team. But what I find to be, I want to be really careful as I set up this episode, because I believe that the future of work is far deeper in a belief and a mindset. If we're going to create something better than what we have now, it's far more than should we go back to the office or should we work from home? And wow. So I want to start at a different place. I want to start at this place of what we always talk about in our community is the age of humanity is the future of work and that business is human. And I want you to share a little bit about that shift for you in becoming a much more people-driven leader. I think you've always naturally just connected with people based on who you are as a human. People like to be around you. Your conversation is easy with you. But you got more intentional even in this people-centered leadership over the last couple of years. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think it is. Every time you talk about the age of humanity, that so resonates with me because I 100% believe in it and see it and feel it every single day. I just think people want to be able to bring their whole selves to work, but I think you do your best job when you know you're truly cared about and valued as a whole person and not someone who's just like a productive outcome on a KPI sheet. And it's so important, I think, from like peers around you to specifically your leader or manager truly caring about you as an individual and understanding like what your values are, what your goals and ambitions are at the moment and aligning how they lead and coach you to that. And let me tell you, I see a really clear and stark difference between people are led that way and people who aren't.
Can you give examples of like scenarios where you see it not being that or changes that you've made? Because I think one of the things that's difficult to articulate in a 40-minute podcast, because you and I and the Rise and Thrive community, we've been talking about this for 5-6 years. And so we have this as common language. You know, when we say it, we just go, yeah, we know what that means. How would we describe that to somebody that just tuned in today? They're like, age of humanity, what's that? Like, what's a lot of times the easiest way to describe something is the opposite of that. Do you have any scenarios that you've seen, experienced where it wasn't? Like just examples of scenarios where people felt more like machines here to produce and KPI drivers.
One example is being super rigid in like your physical presence and availability and not recognizing that you're a whole person balancing quite a bit in order to do this job well. Or it could look like potentially not maybe like micromanaging, like not truly giving people the autonomy and authority to drive their own decision making. Or you could just be like really checked out to the actual needs of an individual, potentially be completely like misaligned with what's important to them right now and what they're looking for out of their job or career.
And I think those go together because a lot of leaders are checked out, burned out, exhausted because they haven't been taking care of themselves and therefore don't have the capacity to be empathic or connected to the needs or the humanity of another. It's hard to be that for someone else and bring out the best in them when you feel like you're at the end of your rope.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you've always lived your whole career a certain way and like it got you to where you are today, it's hard to imagine like approaching or pursuing leadership in a different way. I see that often as people who've, you know, thought about maybe the old way of management, old style, and still continue it today. And it doesn't necessarily always resonate with younger generations who are looking for something different. And they're going to go out and seek out those jobs.
They're going to find it somewhere. Yeah.
They are. And yeah, they're saying yes and no to opportunities based on what that looks like for their life work balance and what it looks like for their family and how this all works together holistically. And I think you really have to recognize that today because it's pretty apparent when you're looking at different opportunities and management styles.
I just came from a lunch with a gentleman that I've worked with as he's been my client for decades in various organizations. And so we always have really great discussions about human behavior and what's happening today and in development for leaders. And we talked a lot about that today, is especially in manufacturing or compliance organizations, is my observation, that during shutdown, there was a movement backward instead of forward for that command and control, because we were in this like huge state of uncertainty. And so people were looking for leadership. And some leaders, especially in a manufacturing or compliance-based environment, went back to that old school way. They're like, okay, this is my time. I get to tell people what to do because nobody knows what to do. And he's experiencing that too. He has a global responsibility for creating leadership development. And he said, yeah, in fact, they, to the degree that they brought back kind of sexual harassment type training, not because of sexual harassment, because of workplace bullying, they're reframing into a workplace bullying content because the command and control has crept back in bigger in some ways. And to your point, you're not going to recruit people with that. That is not going to fly.
You're not. It's completely the opposite. And people are asking about that through their interview process. And in my experience, the best talent we're getting is coming from referrals of people who maybe have been in a culture that didn't recognize this. And they're like, hey, come over here to this team. Like, this is where you can grow and you have a great, strong balance who recognizes all you bring to the table and values that. And I think that's probably the biggest testament, is having team members who recruit their friends.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They see it and feel the difference, and they want to be a part of that. And they want that for, you know, the good people around them that they think can add value.
And I want to really underscore what you just said, because I think too often, again, people see this future of work, age of humanity conversation that we are having as just flexibility. It's just about, you know, can I work from home on these days, or can I have this time off? And you're talking about something much deeper when we talk about age of humanity. It's, do I see this person and who they are with their gifts, talents, abilities? I know who they are. I know their value. I want them to contribute in ways that are relevant to the organization, in ways that are meaningful to the goals, that you're not just seeing it as a number on a spreadsheet. Here's a goal we have to hit, but you're looking at people and you're saying, okay, who is that person? And what are they great at? What's their greatest contribution that they could bring to what we need to accomplish here today? Mm-hmm. That's a level of intentionality that you've been really, really great at as a leader. And that's really what we're talking about. The flexibility is second to that, kind of a
subtitle. Right. Hopefully that's true about me, but it's hard. Like, it takes a lot of additional level of intentionality and work and effort to know people in that way, and then really like be thoughtful in how you're seeking and finding them opportunities. So I would say by far not perfect in that area, but it's such a goal of mine to be able to do that. And it doesn't just happen. Like, you have to really prioritize and spend like a concerted amount of time doing that.
People feel that desire in you, though, as a leader. And I say that to our listeners. Like, it's not about getting it perfect or getting it right. Mm-hmm. It's about people feeling your mm-hmm. desire to know them.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you're doing? Like, if you were saying leader one-on-one, you want to be a more people-centered leader, and it's going to take some effort. What are some of the practical things that you're doing to connect with your team that way?
Yeah, there's probably a list of things you could talk about for like what makes flexible and hybrid work work. But I think what we're speaking about is different. And, you know, that's a lot of the intentional conversations on a regular basis. I talk about this with my friends a lot too. I think there's certainly seasons of life and where you communicate you're at in your career path and your life work balance right now might change in the next year. So it's regularly being attuned with that for your team members and knowing what their goals and priorities are and if that's evolving and changing. It also, I think, takes intentional time and discussion, like I think easy stuff, just like getting to know them and their family and their life and what else they're doing outside of work. Really, like, I think also a good exercise in trying to understand like their core motivation or drivers in terms of job and like incentivization, those types of things. But we have a lot of conversations just around career goals or opportunities and how that might have changed or evolved in the past, and just frank conversations about what's working well and what they'd like to be doing more of. And when I hear something that like, oh, I loved that. That was awesome. That's something I get super excited about. Like, write that down. How can we get them to find more opportunities and put them in like greater leadership roles related to that?
You say that because it's so who you are. And I'm sitting here with this whole host of knowledge of how many people aren't even close to that yet in their leadership. And some that don't know how important it is. Like, I have a client that just left an organization. She would have stayed there forever. She loved this organization. She'd been there for 15 years. And it got so not what you're talking about to the point where she'd closed the biggest deal. She led the biggest section of this Fortune 500 company. I think that's their size. She led their biggest division, just closed the biggest deal in the history of that division. And she walked by her leader, the CEO, at a conference, and he didn't even make eye contact or mention it.
Like, that makes my heart drop. You get so sad.
Right? Right?
I still hear it in, you know, my network or people around me. And part of that is recognition, like truly hearing and seeing people. And it's a really tough balance, I think, as you get higher up than like knowing how much detail to know and still be in touch with. But you have to understand some level of detail in order to provide like the recommendation and coaching and feedback, just like you just described, right? If you don't even see those big moments, and it's super hard, like the bigger your scope gets, the wider your breadth gets, the harder it is to find those things and stay in touch with them. But I mean, that's a part of valuing people.
And I think some people are hesitant to get that involved with their team, their people, because they think they need to solve all their problems, or if they're involved, they have to fix it, or they have. And that's not what we're saying. We're just saying, know them. They're adults. They can manage their own life, but know the context of what's going on in their life. Care about them. Ask about mm-hmm. them. Hey, how's your mom doing? I heard she was in the hospital. Are you okay? Like,
talk to
people at work like you would talk to family member that showed up at your house for a birthday party. Like, care.
That's a great way to describe it. I don't know why that's so uncomfortable, but sometimes I think it can be.
That old industrial age motto was just come to work and work.
Uh-huh. And don't bring any of that to work.
And it's still out there.
And I wonder too, if it comes from historically, you could be at risk for some sort of bias, perhaps.
I think people are just scared in general right now of everything. And that falls into the bucket, because I don't want to get in trouble or step on anybody's toes.
Or you didn't want that to be like unintentionally reflective in people's perception of you or like your capabilities or potential because you shared all this. Maybe that's why. But
people are very fearful right now. So building trust takes the desire to connect with people. Because people are more forgiving and more authentic if they know that you are. We know those situations where the leader says what they were taught in class, leadership class. You should say this as you prepare for the one-on-one meeting, and you should do these things. And they're going through the motions, but you can just tell that they don't give a rat's patoot about the person. They're just checking the box of the leadership checklist of this is what they told me to do in my training class. And if I don't do that, I'll get in trouble. But they don't really care.
And that, I think, is on its way out.
Praise God.
I think if you're still approaching it with that style, like you'll be on the wrong side of history almost.
That's my belief. I will do everything I can for every breath that I have over the years to help shift that.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So let's shift into the flexible remote work conversation, which is one of those things that I believe people want someone to hand them the template. Like, here's the right process for a flexible. And if you work this many days here, and that's not what we're talking about. It's tied to, you got to know the people, you got to know the work, you got to connect the people to the work, and then you can figure out what the right flexibility and remote schedule could and should be. What are some things that you and your team are doing to make this work?
Yeah, I'm at an organization that committed to remote or hybrid work in August of 2020. And I think one of the things I'm most proud of is we stood behind it and we stuck to it. I mean, it even came up on a recent town hall asking if we were going to make changes around that. And the answer is no, we're going to continue with remote and hybrid work. It's working for us. No, it's not perfect. There's certainly things that aren't always working 100%, but it works for our workforce and it works for who we are as a company now. And it's an asset. I think something that draws talent and retains talent in a lot of ways. So whether that's we're able to recruit and hire the best talent nationally versus just in our local area, or we're able to recruit talent from other organizations that are forcing people to move across the country or lose your job, or we're retaining talent that this is an important value for them now.
It just seems crazy that there are those conversations that are actually happening. Like, you have to come back into the office where you don't have a job.
You have to come back in, and it's now it's another state away, and that's not where you live. And that's not what we're about. And so it's certainly really, really challenging, but I think we've made it flexible enough that each manager and team has kind of designed it around what works best for you and the body of work that you have. And, you know, there might be different requirements across the organization based on the type of job you have. But I think there's probably a couple of practices I think that work well for our team. And I really believe it's successful. I still have really strong connections, relationships, and our culture, I think, is better, I don't know, better than that, probably better than ever. In order to do this well, you have to be responsible and hold up your end of the deal in order for it to be successful. And so I think people value it so much that they aren't very responsible with this freedom that you're given. And like, that's all I care about. I care about you and getting the job done. I don't really care about where you are when you do it or what time of day you do it, as long as you're meeting what's asked of you for the role and meeting your goals.
Louder for those in the back. I mean, just get really confused about why it has to be more complicated than that. If you've set expectations, you've got really clear goals and you know what the work is, I just don't understand why it has to be more difficult than that.
I would say the rule of thumb for us is we're often on video. So we're usually on camera. We've not moved to a situation where you're just only hearing someone's voice. And I think that's really important to the part of this whole process is seeing the face and facial expressions. I think we're very intentional about in-person. So we do schedule quite a bit of in-person intentionality, workshopping or strategy development. And that happens regularly, frequently and often. So there's time around that. And there's also intentional time, I think, scheduled near that for social connection as well. So I think that's brought a lot of value to the situation. And it's certainly a flexibility around what works best for you and your role. I look very different. Like, we've got people from coast to coast all working on one team. So the hours you keep, and that definitely varies based on where you're located and what's needed to get your job done. But I think just being really intentional about how you spend your in-person time together. And for me as a leader, I think it's also super helpful. Like, you're frequently in contact with people. Like, you're able to drop in and give them a call and just shoot them a chat, like just do a phone call, and you're regularly in conversation with the team and those people around you. And I think that keeps the connection strong and in that world. So it's we don't have a hard line around here about how often you're in the office and where you're at.
Like, I don't trust you, so I have to tell you what days to do what is the way I feel when I hear people talking about that. And so the first thing I noted was you said you, as leaders, have the autonomy to decide what the flexibility, what the remote nature is, so that you are making the decisions best for the type of work, the time zones, the goal, all those things. Crucial. I think that's crucial for this to be successful. The second thing that you said I want to highlight is that being intentional about the in-person work. Mm-hmm. Because I'm hearing stories of, we're being forced to come in 2 days a week, but we can come any 2 days that we want, because that's where they're putting the flexibility. Well, that's not being intentional about coming together to be in the office for a reason. So what's happening is people are going, driving to the office, sometimes a messy commute, and then sitting in a cubicle or in an office while they're on Teams calls, people that are working from home that day, because they weren't intentional about, we're all going to come together on the same day to solve problems and make decisions and love and trust each other because we're in the same room, which makes our team calls and our Zoom calls better, because now we have that heartbeat to heartbeat connection. Like, literally, it's compliance. It's everybody has to be in 2 days a week, but I don't care which days it is.
That's almost worse.
It's not almost worse. It's the worst it could be. Like, honest to goodness, when I hear that, I'm like, I don't know who made that decision, but no, that's a hard pass. That's
it's
dumb.
Like, you try, but it doesn't work.
It's dumb.
Yeah. So we designed it. I don't have everything right. I could probably tell you like 10 flaws, but we designed it around intentional like strategy sessions that we want everybody to be at. Whatever that workshop is, whatever that strategy session is, or it could be a celebration, or we hit the goal, or we might be, celebrating who knows what. So there's like an intentional session that you have people coming for. And that, to me, that's your week, right? Like, I'm going to be in there for those 2 days that session is. And now that I'm in there for those 2 days, I'm going to stay home the other two. I manage a team that's probably 60% does not live in my city or at my company's headquarters. It's still a challenge to figure out that right balance, because what you just described, I don't need to go into the office if I'm going to be on calls all day with everyone who's in another city for me. Like, they're not going to be in a building.
If you use that level of intention, and that's the word that you've used throughout, it's about being intentional and planning for it. Mm-hmm. As I'm writing this next book around these concepts of Age of Humanity, I went back to a lot of content that I had studied earlier about gathering. And so I see the way that we come together now in these work, whether it's remote or flexible, the way that we come together is intentional, and we treat it as a gathering, just like you would coming together for something else. And you say, why are we here? What's the right environment to get the work done for what we're trying to accomplish? Do we have a good mix of social where people can actually talk without it being conversations that are led by a leader? Do we have the right kind of equipment? Do we have whiteboards so we can actually brainstorm and think, like, really treating it as if we're going to gather, if we're coming into the office, why are we here? What's the right environment? How can I create the right scenario that people can leave and then say, oh, that was totally worth it?
Yeah, exactly. And if you think about it like that, it's actually fun. There's a lot of energy that comes from that. And people get excited and they're like, oh, I like the people I work with. Like, these are other human beings that I connect with. And that makes working together fun.
Versus when you came in and the people that I know that go into the office and do Teams calls by themselves in a cubicle, they leave bitter.
They're mad.
Angry, frustrated. And so their work product is declining. Yeah. And then people are so confused about, I'm like, when you treat people like a machine, they're not going to be excited about the work. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
That's not how it works.
The other big reminder for me of the things that are working well, because there's, you know, there's definitely friction points. It's hard to manage a team that's across the whole country. That is challenging.
Because the other thing you said is being available. That was the other thing you said is you're available for them. So if you're not in the office together, what does that look like practically? Is that, are you on Slack? Are you on a team chat? Or is it just that you're answering, you're being responsive quickly? How do you balance that with the meetings you have scheduled? And how do you do that?
Nailed it pretty well. I mean, it's being available, whether I'm on a cell phone call or a text message chat or a Teams chat, I'm like really available from 8 to 5. And I think across all those teams, just being like, hey, can I give you a call? And dropping in if you want to chat with something. That happens frequently. And I think that's really what's required when you can't just walk down the hall and find somebody to grab a few minutes with them. You have to be able to give them a ring and figure out how to like have that conversation organically. And it's important, I think, just in terms of their connection to the other people in the workplace. So yeah, all of those things.
But I will say that them feeling comfortable to reach out to you at any time, knowing that you're going to be available, is because you've done the work to know them and to hear them and to invest in them. And they trust you. And so they know that if they reach out and say, hey, can we talk? They're going to be met with, of course, give me 10 minutes. I'm finishing up a call right now. Or how about 2 o'clock or whatever? Versus the opposite of that is someone that's working remote and just pops an email out to a leader because they don't have a good relationship with them. They don't think they're going to be responsive. And then it's days or weeks because that email gets buried underneath everything else. And then people are saying, we're so disconnected. This work from home doesn't work. It doesn't work because you haven't paid the price on the front end to say to people, I care about you. How are you? I'm available. Do you need me? And then being efficient with the time that you are together to make decisions, get it done. Don't just keep pushing everything into an email.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. There was something else you said about, usually on camera. Did you get pushback on that at any point in the company? I think your team, you've done a good job of people feeling confident. They probably don't feel like they need to show up with hair and makeup and all the things. It's probably, we're going to respect, just show up. But as a company, did you hear anything about people saying, gosh, I'm having a hard time getting my people to turn their cameras on?
Say no. We've been like this since the pandemic. It has always this way. That was always the culture. We've hired a lot of people in that time period where you entered the company in this culture, and that's just how we operate. And it's probably the standard that's set when you're hired in as a remote employee.
I think that's smart.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't show up to an in-person meeting and put a paper bag over your head so people couldn't see you.
Right. We have to be able to collaborate virtually. That's not easy. There's I think forgiveness in, you might have something going on. You got to just take that from just the voice call. That's allowed, right?
Sure.
You got the ability to allow for that. It's totally fine. I think what's hardest for us is bigger hybrid meetings. That's probably the hardest thing for us to manage is a hybrid large meeting. I think the technology has enabled it pretty well, but it's still a challenge if you've got a large group in person in the meeting, and then how do you engage with maybe 10 people online who couldn't fly in to come to that meeting because you can't fly in for every meeting. So how do you enable the technology and ensure they're engaged and able to be a part of the conversation? I think we're getting better at, but that's probably the hardest thing So ideally they're on camera as well, but sitting on camera for a full day hybrid meeting is
rough. What are, you say you're getting better at it. What are some of the things, is there anything practical that you're doing that's helping?
I think our meeting rooms in our building, we've invested in the technology for that to work well, right? Like that requires microphones throughout the room, like in the ceiling that you can hear the whole room. It requires the right level of camera that's going to be able to include everyone. And I think it requires a lot more. I've hosted several of these, a lot more intentionality in how you design the meeting, knowing that you're going to have a hybrid group. So how do you have smaller breakouts and engagement sessions so that people online are also engaged? It's very hard to be presenting to a room you can't even see or engaged in that environment. So it takes a lot of work to set that up right.
Nobody has talked about the technology piece in these conversations. And that's big. Like you said, the cameras, yes, the microphones well-positioned. Yeah, I hadn't thought about
that. Your room set up, ours are connected. If you invite the room to the meeting, then it will bring the room into the meeting. Like it'll connect that room as a part of the team's call and enable like the screen presentation, sharing, and the audio and everything to be fully connected. And that investment in getting that set up is one of the things I think helps us be really hybrid.
I bet. Oh my gosh, that's big. I love that. So let's bring up this scenario. So if a leader, somebody's listening to this right now and they're saying, oh, that's the answer. I'm just going to call and I'm going to order new equipment and we're going to put better cameras and better microphones in the room and that's going to be it. And you don't care about people and you don't spend the time being available and you don't engage to know who they are, the value that they bring, that you can connect to the work. If all you did was add more cameras and microphones, you missed it.
Sounds right? Like
you missed the point. And that happens more times than I like, that people want a quick fix answer instead of looking at their own behavior or looking at the leadership behavior and saying, okay,
it just takes,
it doesn't replace it.
A lot of work around intentionality and engagement. Yeah. Like I think the next time I have my team in the office, I'm clear with them in advance when we're going to be there in person. And we've thought really intentionally about the agenda for those items. And if it's the time of day that allows for it, like we've planned for some sort of fun team lunch or a workout together. We have workout classes at our office. So I think it's both, like you're coming together and you're getting all this like fun value out of actually being there in person as well.
I love that because I've been a part of those meetings where people were invited. Like it may even be where they paid me to come in and speak, right? People were invited. They didn't know why they were there, what we were going to be talking about. They were flown in, stuck in some dingy hotel. Then they came in. I talked out of context for why they were even there. And then they fly home. Like there's so many things that could have happened to make this way better. You know, why are we here? What's the content?
You gotta lay all that groundwork.
Yes. You
prepare to host those things and bring people along and think about that experience.
Okay, I'm gonna summarize what you've said and then we'll see if you've left anything out, anything that you wanted to say. I'm sure there's a million other things that people could add to this conversation, but I love the way you have this framed up. The overarching theme of today is being intentional. I mean, it's the word that's come up a million times and I couldn't agree more. It's key. So being intentional about your leadership. And then step one is care about your people. And I would say care about the people more than you care about the work, because the work will happen in a beautiful way if you start by caring about the people. If you care about the work more than you care about the people, your work product is going to decline, hands down. Number two, connect the people to the work. So you've been really intentional about saying, what are your gifts and talents? How do those align to the goals? How can we make sure that your contribution matters to you and to the organization? Number three, autonomy. The choices about flexibility and remote and how we get the work done so that people feel like a trusted, valued, smart, respectful human being, not a cog in the wheel, not a machine. Number four is when you do gather, be intentional about the gathering of why you're coming together. What are the decisions we're going to make? How are we going to have social time? making sure everybody knows why they're there. Number five is being available. Once you've done all that groundwork to build a great team, to make sure you're available for their questions and the things that they need in the day-to-day. Technology, make sure that you people are set up to win with the remote aspect of things would be number six. And what I didn't say in the beginning as a company that I think is part of that whole intentionality overarching theme is, as a company, you're committed to it. There's no fear, is this going away? And I think that's important for people's sense of safety and security, is they're not wondering if the other shoe's going to drop every day. And a lot of people are feeling that way right now. So I applaud the company for just taking a hard stance on that. I think that's really important. Yeah.
I think that's been super beneficial. Yeah. Know where you stand, and we know we're all working together to build this and make it possible.
And respect it, because you don't want it to go away. So make it work.
Yeah. Like, you've been given this tremendous freedom. Let's value it and make it work for sure.
100%. 100%. What else? This is great. I don't need anything else, because I think you've added tremendous value to people to be able to just go, okay, here's the steps that seem to be working for Maggie. Yeah. And how can I replicate some of these? I'll tie this back to where we started with saying one of my favorite career moms is, the people who get hurt the most by command and control rules about work and lack of flexibility are the moms. Hard stance, period. I'm not going to even mince words about it. I see it every day in my friends and my clients. It's a fact. And so what you're doing as a company and as a leader in your company is really benefiting the career moms. And I have a big heart for that.
Well, I do too. I think it's really, really important. Yeah. Appreciate you highlighting that.
Yeah. 100%. Thank you for being you.
Absolutely. I'm glad I got to talk about this, because it's something I'm super, super passionate about and trying to live into and make even more successful each day, I think.
And if you're out there, one of those people that are looking for a new opportunity, it sounds like Delta Faucet might be a place you want to go and
see
what's on the career page, or reach out to Maggie on LinkedIn. Is that the best way that people could get in touch with you if they had questions?
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. Love you, mean it.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. I would love it if you would go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. And then you can go to RebeccaFleetwoodHessian.com and join the Badass Women's Council. And if you really want to take a deeper dive, join the movement of 1,000 thriving women. There's amazing Thrive tools there for you today. Love you, mean it. I'm not coming down. Hey, y'all. Fun fact, if you like the music for the podcast, that is actually my son, Cameron Hessian. And I would love it if you would go to Spotify and iTunes and follow him and download some of his other music. My personal favorite is TV Land.